A very good morning to all of you. I will take 15 minutes to share, and then my colleague Mark Lubert will take over for the other 15 minutes in terms of sharing for Malaysia. Let's remind ourselves that this is a consultation. So what I'll be doing, I'll be raising questions and issues, particularly impacting young working adults in the workplace. I think this is the cognitive dissonance, the dualism that we've been talking about this morning. This is actually a real life example, in a sense. So this is what a young person spoke to me. I was a pastor of this church, but I'm no longer a pastor, I'm an elder now. But this young person spoke to me and said that when my friend graduated and went to Mongolia as a missionary, the church made a real fuss over him. But when I graduated, they are same age, you know, and went to work as a lawyer in a top firm in KL, no one took notice. Why the difference in treatment when we are both fresh graduates and both of us are sure of our respective vocations? It caught me thinking and reflecting. You know, the theology of work has been taught quite well in this church and very well articulated. You know, people will say, look, I know there's no sacred secular divide and so on and so forth, and yet this kind of things happen. And it's because the values of the people in this church have not really changed. This is the typical evangelical church, and evangelical piety is, you know, they think of a monk, you know, poor, they have given up on the world, and they live simply penniless, barefoot. And then they look around and say, look, the businessman, the lifestyle is so different from this ideal of the perfect Christian man, you know. The flashy cars, their lifestyles, their platinum gold cards or whatever it is, you know. And then you look at the advertising world. How can people work in the advertising world? Asking us to work, buy things that are worthless, being part of the consumer, capitalist society that is oppressing the people and so on. And how can we support anybody in the theater or Hollywood industry? So at the back of this is, right in the heart where the value system is, they've got all these negative images. So notwithstanding that we've got a good theology of work, yet when someone, young men especially, saying, I will offer myself to go into full-time service, I will turn my back and just live a penniless life, we say, very good. And so this young man got interviewed, this young man was prayed for, all the elders were present, we lay hands on him, and he got to get into a special booklet where you're prayed for every day, every month. This young man who's a lawyer is totally ignored. He graduated from Cambridge with a law degree. And when he came back, he says, if I receive a dollar as to answer the question why I came back, I'll be a millionaire. You know, because if he would have stayed in London or in America, he would be getting literally 20 times his salary. Here is underpaid and overworked, and nobody cares, you know. So we have to work more, you know. So in other words, what is the theology of wealth? For evangelicals, we are very confused over the theology of wealth and money. Okay, Ronald Snyder is our Bible, you know, Rich Christians in the Age of Hunger. How did India as a whole, the poverty level was raised up? How was it raised up? By Christians all over the world living simply? Or was it because of other things? So we, in terms of economics, we are not caught up. Okay, I think this is your field. So in many areas, it is we need an interdisciplinary approach where we need to have theologians, we need to have economists, we need to have people in the arts and performing arts industry to come and talk about their own, their profession, so that slowly this value system is slowly but firmly changed. So it's more than just articulating a theology of work. So what resources are available to help pastors and the average church think deeply? Well, we need theologians. We need people who need to talk about the theology of work from the Bible and so on. We need practitioners who have successfully integrated faith and public life. For example, we have Colin Curtin in Malaysia, who is in the performing arts, you know, and he's an actor. And his father was a missionary, Eric Curtin. Okay, here is a man who has made a name for himself in the theater world and is still a Christian. Okay, and the church needs people like him. And pastors with long experience in ministering to people in the workplace. You know, I always hear, you know, businessmen talking to the pastors, and the pastor says, "I don't know what you're talking about. I just pray for you." I think that I've been a pastor for 30 over years, and when I hear people say that, I cringe. I want to die. I want to crawl into a hole and die. You know, I mean, if a pastor may not have work experience, but like Paul says, you can always visit. I've walked with architects. I've walked with doctors. Got on rounds with them, midnight rounds. And of course, when examining the patient, I stay away and all that. But after he's examined, I talk with him. I talk with the patients. I mean, there's no excuse. And when you listen carefully and when you walk a mile in your shoes, there's no way in which you cannot understand where our business people, our people in the workplace are, the problems that they are facing. And you can. You don't need to be a business person to understand the business world. Because the three G's affect all of us, isn't it? You know what are the three G's? Gold, glory, and girls. Okay, news flash. Young adults are leaving the church. As I go about the churches in Malaysia, I find that the 25 to 35 age group is missing from the church. All I see are grey-haired people, you know. The women, surprisingly, are still nice and black and brown or red. But the men are all grey, you know. Why? Moda. Well, one reason is that the average church is family-orientated and has programs that are geared to meeting the needs of the family. Marriage, what does it mean to be a good husband, issues and problems dealing with parenting, dealing with in-laws, managing household finances, is geared to the family man. But if you're a young single adult, you have no family, how do you plug it to the church? And there were so many questions. What does it mean to be in business to glorify God and others? Some have got it from the region website. How do I serve in a Muslim-dominated civil service as a follower of Christ? The lawyer that I was talking about, if he goes into judicial service, he will be paid peanuts. He will work many, many, many years. At the end of the day, he may or may not be a judge. And so you may invest 20 years of your life and end up with nothing. That's the reality. So how do you still encourage them, the best of young people, to go into the civil service where the glass ceiling is unbreakable? You know, so many, many questions, and we have not even begun to hear, much less answer the questions. This is an email which a mother wrote to a pastor. I'm one of those parents who don't get to see my working children during weekdays. I only get to see Jonathan on weekends, and we sometimes have to communicate via email, SMS, or WhatsApp. And Jonathan, his son, is staying with her, living with her. So where is the daughter? And she just worked 30 hours straight for Wednesday and got home yesterday at 4 p.m. She got today off just to sleep. It saddens me or us that Asian employers or other customers are so demanding that the deadline was yesterday. No wonder young working adults prefer to move to Europe or Australia. So how do we mentor young working adults in marketplace? What does spirituality in marketplace look like? They are out at dawn and they come back after midnight, sometimes 7 days a week. And they can't plug in into your church program, not even in the evenings. They have no time for church, and sometimes they come on church and the pastor preach things that are irrelevant to them, and they say that, look, sleep is so precious, why do I get up on Sunday to hear rubbish? You know? So they have no time for church, they're working flat out. So how do we mentor them? How do we walk alongside them? How do they grow to be a Christian? And that is very relevant to our young people. For example, to be helpful young people, if you are just accountant and you don't meet with people, well, the spiritual discipline of engagement is important, in which you go out deliberately, build relationship, talk to people. Or you're out always all the, you know, as a PR person, marketing person, and so on. Maybe the opposite. We encourage you to practice the spiritual discipline of withdrawal. Spend time alone. Quiet. Will it make sense to the young people? I think it may, when you talk about spiritual discipline this way, in a way that fill you out, in a way that makes you more whole, right? So we got to think more seriously how to do things. And how do we do personal mentoring? If you are a senior lawyer, how do you mentor your young lawyers in your firm and in your church, or a doctor? I was glad last Sunday to see a young medical graduate intern in a hospital crying away, talking to the senior doctor. And that was good. Senior doctor, young doctor. Perhaps you need to have personal and guided weekend retreats. Okay, tell young people way ahead. Block this weekend out. We'll go away. We're going to listen to you. We're going to listen to us. We're going to meditate on scripture or whatever it is. You know? So, when our young people are so busy that they can't plug in into the church programs, the question I want to ask is, how do we then disciple them and mentor them? So, these are some of the things that I was thinking about. So, okay, enough about questions and issues. I think there's a lot of things for us to think about and to reflect on. Mark.
Okay, so I think that sets the scene for what people are facing and having to deal with here in Malaysia. Now, I'm not Malaysian, you might have noticed, but I've been working here for 4.5 years and I've picked up some of the vibes, if you like, or some of the challenges that people here are experiencing. So I think what we've seen there is perhaps the hunger that is underlying the culture but the church isn't meeting. And I think perhaps what I take away from that, and something that what Paul's talked about, is that we have to develop our model to reach people where they're at. And I think the church and the seminaries too have had a mentality, this is our campus, this is our church, you should come to us and we'll give you what we think you need. And I think what we have to do is revolutionize that and say, you've got spiritual hunger, you've got need for development, you've got an opportunity to grow, how can we come to you and help you mature in your spiritual faith? And that is a revolutionary idea. And I think I see that that's starting to happen. I just want to introduce this. This is called Faith in Business. It's a UK journal based at Ridley Hall, which is the Anglican Training College in Cambridge. And I write for this journal occasionally, and this is mainly written by, the journals are mainly written by working people with a theological background. I published a Theology of Corruption based on my experience here in Malaysia, so that's in this issue, if you want to take a look. And there's also this book here, which I always recommend in my courses, Experiencing God by Richard Blackaby. Quite a well-known book, and this is the model that I always teach. God is at work, he calls us to join him. And then the rest of the story is, how do we join God in what he's doing rather than try and get God's buy-in for what we want to do? So I think these things are quite key. So I used to have a Mac and I sold it. Okay, so all right. So Yeah, what are the frameworks? This is Tony's, I think, is it? Okay, here we go. And what I see is that there's a substantial divide between Sunday and working week. And I think that's the case probably across the entire world. I don't think that's Asian. It was certainly the case in the UK. It's probably the case in America. I don't think there's much teaching from the churches. I think that some churches, DUMC and SIVKL, I think they're on board. Some of the other churches, I think, are too, but it's a bit patchy. So the large church activity is probably stronger. SIVKL, which is my own church, we have a workplace month every year, and we have preaching on work. And what we do after each, not lecture, what's it called, sermon, is we call people forward. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. Is we call people forward for ministry. So when I'm one of the preachers, and another guy, Alvin Ong, who Paul, you know, is the other one, and Pastor Chu as well. And after the sermon, we call people forward, and there's a huge movement. I would say maybe 25 to 30% of the church comes down for prayer. Now, what does that tell you about the spiritual hunger of that church? If people are prepared to get out of their seats and come forward. So I think there's the need is there. There's quite a lot going on. Alpha in the workplace, very good, and there are other ministries active, and there's a lot of good tools available. Maestro is a US system, but it's very good for workplace ministry in the lunch hour. Alpha, plenty of books and so on. So I think there's quite a lot there, and quite a lot that can be done. Now, the result of this dualism, this radical, is a radical disconnect between faith or spiritual life and work. And what I see is that the results in a lack of spiritual power in the workplace. So I believe very strongly that we are called to live in relationship with God day to day, and that we can fulfill our role and our calling in the power of God when we connect with Him. And if people don't understand that, then they operate their daily working lives in their own strength, if you like. And the result is a lack of vision. What is my work for? What am I doing here? I don't know what to do. How do I apply the tools that are available to me? How do I act in a way that is spirit-filled and is referenced to the Word of God on a day-to-day practical basis? We were talking about the question of, if I have a choice between my relationship with God and the eternal principles of the Kingdom of God versus making more profit, or in some cases even surviving, which do I choose? And in my own area of corruption, this is often a direct choice. Do I do the right thing and risk bankruptcy, or do I do the wrong thing and use bribery to get the work that I need to keep my company going? And it's often a radical choice to make. So there's often a lack of knowledge on how to apply biblical principles to work in a practical way. How do I do it day to day? When I'm dealing with this difficult member of staff, how do I deal with them in a biblical way? And people, I don't think, really connect their Bible teaching with their day-to-day challenges. And the result I'll talk through in a minute. But I think the majority of Christians don't realize that their work actually matters to God, and that it can be their primary means of developing Christ's likeness and God's means of national transformation. Maybe in a micro level, or maybe in a macro level. And I see God working at the macro level here in Malaysia. Okay, now I think the impact on this disconnect changes according to the level. So I think for senior business people, CEOs, business owners, top management, generally speaking, they see Christian approaches to business as impractical, naive, and a shortcut to oblivion. You've got a choice. You can be a Christian, or you can be a successful businessman or woman. And there's no middle ground for many people. So they like to go to church on Sunday, they like to sing the songs, they have lunch with their family afterwards. Come Monday, they just transform into a whole different person. And they don't even know how to make that bridge. And because they don't know how to do it, then they just think it's basically a shortcut to oblivion. There's also, I think, the gospel of what you call hypergrace. You can do whatever you want, God will forgive you. So I can exploit my workers, I can make them work 7 hours, I can make them work, yeah.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On a Monday, they completely retract themselves back. Why? Because they don't see anything Christian in the Christians.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
there is corruption, there is people go for donations, the money goes somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, I'm talking about personal experience from Chennai with Christian business, top business guys.
Yeah.
On Sunday, he's there in the church. Monday morning, he is completely back as a business guy. So where do you bring a parallel to that?
So just let me, do you want to talk, just to check, do you want me to take questions now as we go, or do you want to run through it? Okay, I think it would be great to have open Q&A afterwards if we can, because that's a very important, and just to check, are you talking about problems in the church, which means that the business people...
So problems in the church, problems in the Christian organizations, problems in the Christian NGOs,
right.
Problems in the seminary.
Yeah.
He's saying, man, leave me out, I don't want to. I'm talking about Christians who run billion-dollar companies.
Okay, so the church, we have to model, we have to practice what we're preaching, don't we? We can't accuse the businessman of mismanagement and exploitation and misuse of funds if our collection plate is, I'm channeling some of that collection plate into my own account, or using church money to forward the singing career of my wife in Los Angeles. Just to take a purely hypothetical example. So what we see is so hypergrace, I see this as a major challenge, because some churches preach that you can do anything you want and you just have to say a little bit of a sorry to God and everything's fine. Yeah, and you might tithe 10% of your drug dealing profits, and you're okay. And I see that as a genuine problem, and it's here in Malaysia, it's certainly in Singapore and other places around here. So I think the result is actually we see very little difference between Christian companies and non-Christian companies on the whole. And use of corruption, bribery to secure business deals, as an example, I think within the last 10 days, where a very well-known Christian-owned company got a massive deal with the government in a closed negotiation. And it was a 600 million ringgit deal. And it was in the papers, I think a few nods around the table. And the owner of this company is a very publicly proclaiming Christian guy. But he's doing closed negotiations with the government and delivering very poor value for money. Now, that shouldn't be happening. So really, there's not much difference between Christian organizations and companies and non-Christian. However, there are examples. One company we deal with, Thumbprints United, very strong Christian ethos. We actually bring him in our TI work to talk about. He became a Christian in 1997, was using all the usual underhand means to get business, and then stopped and nearly went bankrupt. But he survived, and now actually we bring him into our conferences to talk to government organizations and so on to explain how, as a Christian, he's made a difference. In my concrete work in the construction sector, very, very difficult to do ethical business, but he's survived and done well. So there are examples where people have lived their faith in the working world, and we should make the most of it. And Tony talked a bit about this Generation Y struggling to cope. Very, very demanding, far more demanding here than in the UK. In the UK, I worked a 37-hour week. People blink at me and ask if I was a part-timer. So 60, 70, 80 hours, quite common. And young people, young people leave, in the morning and they get home at 10 and 11 at night quite frequently. And it's because if they don't do that, it's not just one company. It's very, very common. And their parents, they invested all this money in their education. They want to see their children do well. Very high parental expectations and peer pressure, of course, to drive a bigger car and so on. And actually what I see is it's difficult for young adults to fully submit their lives to God and pursue a non-financially driven calling. That doesn't mean that it's to be a minister or a pastor or a missionary. It just means that some jobs don't pay as well as others. But the pressure is to get the money in and work unbelievably long hours rather than pursue a job that's more balanced but doesn't pay as well. A lot of pressure. However, there are exceptions to the rule, and amongst my own staff, they're there. And I would guess that a lot of young people, if they had the choice of a decent income and a balanced life, would choose it. The income isn't, but the option isn't there. Okay, now courses. I developed this course with MBS, and I taught it once. Advertised it through all the churches and across the valley. I got 8 people. I hoped it was relevant, and I got very good feedback from the attendees, but it was either 30 or 45 hours over 2 weekends or 1 long weekend, and it was just too much. I'll talk about that in a minute. These are the areas I covered: theology of work, of course, identifying and following your calling, guidance and making godly decisions, Christian ethics with scenarios, people enjoyed that a lot. Spirituality at work, using Alvin Unn's book, so how do you encounter God through the workplace? Corruption, the biblical position, though is it right, or is it some Christians don't even know it's wrong? They think it's normal and it's okay. Handling conflict, something that I don't think many of us are very good at. Imaging God, this is a concept that we developed with Integra, which is a group that Sengi and Alvin and a few others ran. How can your business become the presence of God in the marketplace as an entity? Not just you, but your actual organization, where you are dealing with people justly, that you are doing what you say, acting with integrity as a business. And we developed this concept. Spiritual warfare, probably in my industry, I encounter this pretty well most days. So how do you deal with spiritual warfare at work? It might be through work colleagues, or it might be through the nature of the work that you do, but it's actually quite prevalent. And especially, I think, in this environment where you've got, for example, it's quite common to have shrines in the workplace with spirit worship and so on. How do you deal with that? And stewardship in the environment. I don't think the environment is top of the list of people's priorities in this area. In the UK, it was normal thinking to think about this, but not so much here. So wakening people up to the challenge of the things like global warming and so on. So I hoped it was practical and useful. But I don't think it really fired people's imaginations in the way that we were hoping. So I did it at either 30 or 45 contact hours over a long weekend. That was a 30-hour course, or 45 hours. Now, 30 hours over a long weekend for somebody who's working full-time is very demanding. And it required them taking the Friday off, working all day Saturday and Sunday afternoon. So when they go back to work on Monday morning, you can imagine what state they're in. And I was in the same state because I was going back to work too. Or over 2 weekends, but that's very demanding as well, and people have families and so on and so forth. So not just for the students, but for me. And what we found in KL was actually a very low take-up. 8 people, and 2 of those dropped out for the second weekend. We ran it once, and we didn't run it again. That doesn't mean we won't run it again. It just meant that we kind of put that aside for the time being. We did it in Sarawak and Sabah, and we got a much better take-up, funnily enough. And I'm not quite sure why. It may be because there's less pressure for people working there, but it worked better there. But what we decided was the format isn't very suitable for full-time workers. This worked much better. This was a one-day seminar on a Saturday, organized by a church, and we got about 50 to 60 people. Much easier to sell, much easier for them to cope with. And I worked with a local church, quite a large one, and in fact they asked me to come and do it for them, which was great. And they advertised it, they provided the venue. I think one thing is, psychologically, people like to go to places they're familiar with. So having it in their own church was a lot easier than asking them to go to a seminar room somewhere else, even if it was an easy to get to place. Same materials, actually. I just cut this into 2 or 3. And chose the areas that I thought were most engaging, and I got good response. And actually, this could be run as a series, maybe 4 Saturdays over a period of a year. Again, much more digestible, much more manageable. I think that worked well for the working people. The only thing is, it does require 1 full Saturday, but if it's just occasionally, once a quarter, it's not such a big deal. Some people work Saturday morning, but they seem to be able to get the time off. I think that's the best approach for working people. The other one I've tried is evening classes, short run, 1 or 2 evening classes on specific topics. Again, invitation by a church, part of their ongoing education program, and 1 topic covered per evening. And what I do is I give a short talk, about 20 minutes, and then have discussion and workshops. Otherwise, people fall asleep. Probably not sure whether it was me or whether it was because they were tired. Either way, I have to be realistic. And again, that got a good response. The only thing is, it takes a long time to cover the ground. You've got 2 hours, people are a bit tired, but, you know, it's one way of doing it. I travel a certain amount in my work, so sometimes it's not possible. But I thought it was okay, but I'm not as good as the Saturday one. Okay, so where do we go from here? I think what we really want is Malaysians with working experience and a heart for this to just do more. I think you talked about adjunct lecturers. It would be great if we just had more people who could teach, and then churches and seminaries could offer more courses, and they can have different people coming in. And the good ones, I think, will go well. Church pastors, is it worth having some kind of awareness program? I'm not sure who would run that, whether it be seminaries or what. I think seminary courses on workplace theology for pastors in training would be great. Because I think a lot of people go right the way through seminary and this doesn't even come on the radar. And then they go out to be working to the outside world. They may well have come straight from college to seminary, and then they're a pastor, and suddenly they realise that 90% of their congregation are doing something that they've got no experience of and no training in. So helping them connect and actually introducing workplace talks into the seminary trait teaching might be good. What I do believe is we're going to see growth in this area over the coming years, because people are working out that actually work is important. So I think we're at the start of a growth curve, and it's encouraging to have this out doing this. Okay, that's me.